Welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Every once in a while, I have a conversation that starts in one place and ends up somewhere entirely different. This one begins with worms, which may or may not sound promising to you right now, but stay with us because what unfolds in this conversation is really about much more than composting. It's about stress. It's about joy. It's about the pace of modern life and the things we've quietly lost along the way. My guest today has spent more than 20 years helping people rethink waste, food, health, and even laughter itself. And somewhere in the middle of talking about sprouts, soil, and indoor composting, we ended up having a surprisingly thoughtful conversation about resilience, sensitivity, purpose, and why so many of us have forgotten how to slow down long enough to actually enjoy our lives. There's also a lot of laughter in this episode, which feels fitting. Listen now to my conversation with Kathy Nesbitt. Have you ever noticed how sometimes the simplest ideas are the ones we resist the most? Like having worms in your house. Stay with me, because what if that idea, worms, composting, growing your own food, wasn't really about dirt or scraps at all? What if it was about reclaiming a sense of control, purpose, and even joy in a world that can feel increasingly out of our hands? And what if something as unexpected as laughter could be just as essential to your well-being as anything you eat or grow? Sometimes it's really hard to read my intro because I've got the guest in my peripheral, and Kathy was just clapping. Today's conversation is one of those beautiful reminders that creating your next chapter doesn't always require a big dramatic reinvention. It starts with something small, a shift in perspective, or even a daily laugh for no reason at all. Kathy Nesbitt, welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
Agnes, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
No, and this is going to be good. And we were talking before I clicked record about my interview with Linda LeClaire 5 years ago, and we laughed all the way through. So I'm looking forward to this.
Every 5 years, a good laugh, good
Yeah,
idea.
right. Oh God, no. No. It's just like pumping up the tires. Ah, dear. Okay, now you describe yourself as a worm advocate on a mission to put worms in every living space, which is not something most people grow up aspiring to. How did this path find you?
Yeah, so I'm located in Ontario, Canada, just north of Toronto, and I'm from Toronto. And in 2002, our landfill closed and we started to export our garbage to the US. And I had a solution. So even if we go back further, I bought my house in 93 and I couldn't wait to start gardening and composting. And a teacher friend asked me to look after her worm bin for the summer. I didn't want worms in my house, but I knew the value of the worm compost. So I said, okay, I think we should take on challenges, like not let somebody else tell us, oh, you won't like that. So I took on the challenge. I didn't like it. I was a fruit fly farmer, so because I was doing it incorrectly.
By choice.
No, I needed to keep the worms alive for my friend, and I wanted the black gold. So I was dedicated to get to do it, at least keep the worms alive. At the end of that summer, I put on big gloves, separated the compost, and said, I'm never doing this again. That's it. Nice experience, not for me. All the while getting my psych degree, I graduated in 2000, got a job at a group home working with challenged adults. So that was my first experience with the worms, was in 93. And then I was like, nope. 2000, I get a job at a group home working with challenged adults. They had a farm and 10 homes, and they didn't compost.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, why don't, what? What? It was the first time that I realized people don't connect what they do. Here they are creating all of this food waste. They have a farm,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
they're paying like a whack of dough to get rid of it, to ship it away. And so I approached management and I said, why don't you compost? Like turning your scraps, it's something for, the folks to some of the folks to do, and then you can use that. And they're like, oh, we don't need the fertilizer because we have cows. And I was like, huh? What? And then the greenhouse manager said, "Well, what about vermicomposting?" Oh my gosh, Agnes, have you ever done something that you were all excited about, but then it didn't work out the way you thought? And you're like, no, I'm not doing that again. I tried it. But then somebody says, "Hey, Agnes, why don't we," whatever it was. And you get that feeling in the pit of your stomach, like, oh no, not again. That didn't work. I don't know. But I came home from work that day and I was like, ah, it's an institution. They're not getting worms anytime soon. So I started to do research about vermicomposting and the whole process. And I had a magnificent shift. So there I was. I had my first introduction in 93. I'm kind of in a different space now. And so it's special worms that you use for vermicomposting, red wigglers. And I heard that or learned that the red wigglers eat half their weight per day. They turn garbage into gold. Their poop is black gold. And that the that what was it? A pound of worms and their descendants could transform a ton of organic waste in a year. And that the average Canadian
Wow.
slash American family creates a pound of organic waste per year. And I was like, oh, every family needs a pound of worms, and I'm just the one to put a pound of worms in every house. So that was kind of my beginnings.
Wow. Okay. And it's interesting too how, and maybe a really good lesson to take away just even in the first couple of minutes here is that, even you had experience with the worm bin, and you still went, ugh. But when you start digging in and getting more information, getting a little bit of education, you start to see the value, and it really can turn around how you think about something.
Absolutely, yes. And I have a psych degree, and so I'm fascinated by people and what they do, why they do what they do and or don't do. And oh my gosh, so many people said, ew, worms in the house. And I realized that, oh, people had experience as a child. After a rainy day, somebody chased them with a worm or a fishing incident, the green goo. They had an experience. If you have an experience with something, a negative experience, you put that out of your mind. You're like, okay, yeah, not that. And so keep listening if you had an experience with worms as a child. So I was like, oh my gosh, so I have an extra barrier, like an extra hurdle to get worms in inside somebody's house that had an experience. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. In many ways, I mean, I don't do what you're doing, but I'm the person who walks down the road after the rain, and picks up all those poor worms that have gotten themselves out on the pavement and make sure they're back on the grass.
Wonderful.
You know,
Thank
but you're
you.
those big ones. They're not the little red wigglers. But yeah, it's I guess it's the old story of everything's got a purpose, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's my goal. So what when I started my business in 02, I would have a table wherever I could. I'd be there with my, championing the worms. You need worms. And I don't have an entrepreneurial background, so I didn't realize that people don't buy what they need, they buy what they want. And they didn't want what I was flogging, even if they needed it. And so I was like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? How am I going to put worms in every living space if people are afraid of worms? So I started to do school workshops, and over 100,000 students have seen my presentation. So beautiful. And I've had the pleasure of knowing that I'm making a difference. We all are. Every time we smile at someone or we don't, we hold the door or we don't, we're impacting people. And I've been at, events. I usually have my shirt, Kathy's Crawley Composters. I always have my shirt on, but sometimes I have my work shirt on. Oh, why are they looking at me? Oh, I don't have my shirt on. No. And so people will come up to me and say, oh my gosh, Kathy, you were in my grade three class, and because we had worms in the class, or because of you, whatever they say, I went to university and I'm now an environmental lawyer. That happened more than once.
Oh,
And I was
wow.
like, wow, that's a like so it matters what happens in school.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too that my first thought going back a wee bit is that, you talk about having worms in everybody's house. It's a worm bin. So it's not like they're just crawling across the kitchen counter.
They're not free range.
No, exactly. And
Sorry,
then
PETA.
And then, as you just said, and I've heard this about so many different things, like especially nowadays when we need to think about the environment, we need to think about so many big picture things, is by educating children, children go home and apply the pressure to the parents. And, I mean, it's one thing to go home and apply pressure for a brand new fancy schmancy $2,000 bicycle. It's another thing to go home and say, I learned today that, like this worm can eat, its body weight every day, or, like a pound of worms can save whatever it was, half a ton, or like something. Like when they've got numbers and it's something so simple and natural, then, parents will go, okay, we'll do this. And so going after the kids has got to be a stroke of genius.
Right. And it was so beautiful, so much fun. Again, back to Toronto, much like Vancouver or any large city, like it's concrete jungle. And some of these children, a lot of them are immigrant families who now live in these high rises without green space. Some of them have never even seen a worm, never mind touched a worm. So it's that whole fear factor. And I truly believe that if we're not connected to something, why would we care about it? Like if you've never been to the forest, why would you care if they cut it down? We do need more housing, so just take the forest out, it's fine. Right? If so, once we get connected, and that's my role with the worms, going in, setting up the worm bin, the grand finale of my workshop, if the classroom is getting a bin, is holding the worms. They've set up the bin, the students do that, so they're hands-on, it's really fun. And then holding the worms. And it's, some of them are really afraid, like, oh, you can see them shaking. And I say, it's okay, I hold their hand, it's okay, it's all right. They don't have teeth, they can't bite, nothing to do. It's okay. And if they don't want to do it, that's okay too. I say, please, no pressure to do this. But then they're attached. And then, like you said, after a rainy day. So that's, I end my session by saying, now you're connected to the worms. You've held a worm. You love the worms. You know how valuable they are. After a rainy day, if you see worms on the sidewalk and they're kind of going the wrong way, now you can help them back to the grass.
And I mean, even for I've walked with people who go, well, you can't touch that thing. And it's like, okay, if you don't want to touch it, there's got to be a blade of grass or a leaf or something that you can slip underneath it, scoot it over. Like I pick them up. It's not a big deal to me, but so.
Right. Yeah. So it really is an important thing because we do need, if we don't know things, it's like how history repeats if we don't remember history. We're like, oh, look at this great thing's happening. No, we did that before already. We've been here.
Yeah, been there, done that.
And you talked about the impact. Why would anyone want to do worm composting or composting? It doesn't matter to me if you compost or you just feed the raccoons. I don't mind. But your neighbors might not be happy. Vermicomposting is a solution for everywhere. If people live in a cottage country where there may be bears or other wildlife that you don't want to attract to your yard, vermicomposting is a great solution. In Toronto, there was a Molson plant that closed down. It was there for decades, and it closed down. This old factory was a rat haven. So when they took down the factory, the rats had to go somewhere, and they are opportunists. So they moved into the co-op where they had a beautiful community garden, beautiful composting. They had to close all of that down because the rats are like, oh, look at it's buffet time. It's warm. There's food right here. Nothing to do. Because they're opportunists. Like people are like, I don't want, like if I when I promote outdoor composting, people say, I don't want to attract rats. Rats aren't necessarily attracted to composting, particularly if you don't put meat in it. If it's just vegetables, they're carnivores, really. They're omnivores, but they really do like meat.
Well, meat smells better after 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Well.
So it's great for apartment dwellers who don't have place to do outdoor composting. Great for like in Canada, we can do it year round. It's great for Texas or hot climates where it's too hot in the summer to do worm composting outside. It's just ideal for everywhere.
Well, and I can't talk about the rest of even North America, but I know here we've got some really nice, good-sized enclosed bins. They've got their air vents and all that sort of stuff, but A rat couldn't get in unless it just really wanted to gnaw on this really hard plastic for a couple of days. It's tight, so bear can't get in. And we've just recently had out on Vancouver Island here this whole thing with rats, and now grizzly bears. We've never had grizzlies before, but they're over here. So
Wow.
where everybody's really looking at this again of, oh my God, what do we do to keep these creatures away from our homes? So
Yeah, it's quite something. It's quite remarkable. And so everybody eats. So everybody creates food scraps. And I think managing our food scraps is one thing we can do to help mitigate climate change. And it offers so many solutions. We're not shipping the stuff away, so we don't have the fossil fuels from the truck. All of that, the food doesn't wait till it gets to the composting facility to start breaking down. So it's off-gassing methane all the while. We're turning it into something usable. The worms are the original alchemists, turning garbage or trash into black gold, aka nutrient-rich soil, so we can grow more nutrient-rich food. In North America, we have destroyed the soil. Like, we're so smart. The chemical engineers are very smart, and they've created these wonderful chemicals. I'm saying wonderful in quotes, that allow us to grow acres and acres of corn, wheat, and soy. But that's not how nature intended. We really are meant to do like what is it called? Permaculture, where you're growing lots of things together, because then you have companion planting. Things help each other. They keep the bugs at bay, and everything works. Where now we need to keep on creating, like keeping the chemical engineers in business forever, because they need to keep on coming up with stronger and stronger chemicals. And now the chemicals are inside the plant, so we can't even wash them off. Not that you can wash them off anyway. People go, I rinse my things. I said, do you just rinse them in water? Because if you do, they don't come off. Because if they did, when it rained, they would wash off, and they don't.
Oh, good point there. So the last time I laughed at that little bottle of spray stuff to clean the vegetables with, I shouldn't have laughed.
Well, yes, I mean there are cleaners that you can get, but you can also just fill up your sink with water and put a teaspoon of baking soda.
Simple as
Kind of
that.
swoosh your things around, and give it a good rinse, and voila.
Well, there we go. Okay, I'm going to back up the bus a little bit. You have faced a lot of negativity about your mission. What did that teach you about standing behind something you believe in, even when others don't get it? Like, did it teach you anything about the world or about yourself?
Absolutely. Well, I believe that I was divinely guided to do this business. I don't have repeat customers. Like, who would start a business without repeat customers? Because worms breed more than rabbits. They're just not as cute and cuddly, depending who you ask. So I know in my heart, in my DNA, I know this is needed and it's really important. And I was chosen to do this. I believe I was to be the spokesperson. I don't have fear of public speaking. So that's where, all of my gifts came. And so I'm like, I have a ton of energy, and we'll get to the sprout soon, I know.
Yeah, we will.
Right. But I have a ton of energy. I have passion, which I think helps people understand. They might not want worms after, but they're able to pay attention to what I'm saying because of my passion. So what has it taught me? Well, that you need to have passion in order to get people on board. You need to find your people that are going to support you. There was a lot of people that said, ew, worms in the house, and I would take that personally on a certain level. Like, not like saying it out loud, it sounds so ridiculous. It's like, oh, how shallow. But I'm super sensitive, and I'm an empath, and I think all of these things are gifts. I was in a school one day, and a young girl said to me, oh, she came up after the workshop. She said, oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sensitive. I'm too sensitive. And I said, thank you for sharing that. Please never say that again. Because what does it mean to be sensitive, that you care? What does it mean to be too sensitive? You care too much. Wouldn't it be great if we had people that cared too much? More people that, or
More
more people
people,
that
yeah.
cared at all, rather than just about me. If people cared about everyone or about the other, it would be a much more hospitable place to live. So I just asked her to never say that again, because I heard that too. Oh, grow a thicker skin. The world is a harsh place. Stop crying. And these are all truths. And I don't think that the sensitive entities are taking care of us children. We're just told to get over our sensitiveness, and it's not possible. It's who we are.
Well, and I mean, this is a whole other direction we could go in, and we won't, because I want to stick with earworms. But like if more people cared, we wouldn't have lost some of the species we've lost in the last 20 years. We wouldn't have maybe some of the wars that we've got in the anyways, we're not going to go there. Many women in our audience are facing transitions. They're navigating transitions, whether it's retirement, identity shift, now that we're this age. They're asking, what now? Did you ever have a moment where you questioned your path? And if you did, what helped you stay with it?
Okay, so I'm not sure how to go about this story, but when I was a young person, I don't know, the message that I got was that women could do five things. We could be teacher, secretary, nurse, waitress, or secretary. I know there was no memo. I didn't get the memo. That was just kind of what was in my mind. And it was a bit of a gift because it wasn't like you could do anything. So how do I decide what to do if I could do anything? If you have a list of five things, it's like, oh, okay, all right, I'll be secretary. So I took all those courses, business English, typing, which is a gift today, shorthand, which not a gift at all today, because we have dicta machines or whatever recorders. And so I thought that was my lot in life. And I was a great secretary as a people pleaser. Wow, tell me what to do and I'll do it. And I'll do it better than anyone because I don't want to lose my job, right? So, okay. So, and then at the same time, there was my stepfather passed when I was 21, and I loved my stepfather very much. And I don't know why I attached his passing with work. I was like, I'm never going to stay in a job that doesn't serve me because we're at work a lot of the day. So I would quit my job. Even though I'm a people pleaser and all those things, I knew that I didn't want to stay in a job. So when I got bored at a job, I would just quit and get another job. I didn't buy into all of the expressions like, oh, you need to have a job to get a job, you got to have experience, all these things. I was just like, no, I'm really good. I will get another job. And I did. And for the last 10 years of my secretarial life, I was a secretary for 20 years. Can you imagine? Because I didn't know there was something else. I didn't even know that skills were transferable. Like I was the president's secretary at Bulova Watch, and there was a job that came up for at another company in marketing. And I was like, oh, I don't have any marketing or customer service experience. It's like, yeah, I did. I was the gatekeeper. I was in charge of the company. Right? If I didn't want you to get through to the president, you didn't. But I didn't know, and we're not taught these things. We're not taught that our skills are transfer. Maybe they are today, but I didn't know that my skills were transferable. So for the past 10 years, or the last 10 years, I was a Kelly girl, temporary. And you have to be pretty independent and pretty confident to work temporary because you're going into companies or going to workplaces for a day or two or maybe a mat leave or whatever, halt vacation. People don't take the time to get to know you because you're going to be going. And they don't give you, at least at that time, the belief kind of was that you couldn't hold down a real job. That's why you work temp. So I was getting my psych degree during that time, and I joke and say I was getting paid to get my degree because they wouldn't give me work. I'd be receptionist, say, I'd answer the phone, I'd do my job, and then between times I'm reading, I'm writing my essays, I'm doing my schoolwork. It was beautiful. So what did I what I lost the track of the
Oh, whether you ever questioned your path. So you obviously at some point in time questioned that path.
I did question. Yes, I did question. And then I got my psych degree, and from there I got a job at the group home. And then I realized, oh, This was what I was meant to do, was work with challenge folks, but I couldn't work with management because management was too judgy. Management forgot. I feel like they were in their ivory tower and they forgot what it was like to be on the front lines when you
We
have to
could
just.
compare stories there, yeah. So,
Right. So then I left there, and actually one day I was injured at work. And I can right not staying in a job that doesn't serve me anymore. So I came home from work. There was an ad in the paper, and it said, "Are you a woman? Yes. Do you have a business idea? Yes." Because I thought, "Oh, maybe I'll start a worm business," but it was kind of just percolating back there. So I was like, "Oh yes, oh yes." So I said to my husband, "I'm quitting my job. I'm taking this course. I'm going to start a worm business. Won't this be fun?" And so many things came together, Agnes. 2002, the landfill for the Greater Toronto Area closed. So we started to export our garbage to Michigan, out of the country. 1,000 trucks a week. What? Oh my gosh, how irresponsible of us. And double shame on the Americans, by the way, for accepting our garbage for cash. And not the people. I'm not shaming the people, the governments. Okay. And then 2002, so I took this course, started my business, and then in 2002 there was a garbage strike. Yep, in the summer.
Right, I remember.
Yeah. Not much of a world-class city when you have piles of stinking garbage. Talk about rodents.
I was going to say, speaking about
Right?
rats.
It's like, woo, let's go to Toronto. And that's when I got my taste of media. Because I was like, oh, when I used to watch the news, wow, people were lining up for hours to drop off their garbage. And I was like, those people don't compost. Because if you compost, it takes the stink out of garbage. Your recycling doesn't smell, your cans and paper and whatever, no smell. So I decided to go on a road trip with my worms. I sent press releases to the Toronto outlets. And 5 minutes after sending my press release to the Toronto Star, a reporter contacted me and said, "Thank you for your press release. I wrote an article last week about composting and I forgot about the apartment dwellers. Can you come down to the Star?" Because I said I was going to the transfer station to see what was going on. He said, "When you're done at the transfer station, can you come to the Star? I want to interview you." So I was like, "Yuppie, that's what I want." And right, I have a psych degree, I'm curious. So I did go to the transfer station. And I don't know where I got the, again, I must have been divinely guided, Agnes. It was dangerous what I did. I think I really put myself in danger because of the mob mentality. The one transfer station I went to had maybe 80, 100 picketers, and they were angry. They were angry that I was there. The people were all lined up. I had a list of questions. So I was entertaining for the people waiting hours to drop off their garbage. So I was there, dee, 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 dee. Oh, look at some entertainment. Yahoo. So there I am battling the union. They're shouting things at me that I can't say here. And I was like, no. Nope. And then they're saying, "Go away. You can't be here." And I was like, "I can be here. It's a public road." And they saw that I wasn't going anywhere. So now they're addressing the people and they said, "If you talk to this woman or take anything from this woman, we're not going to let you drop off your garbage." They took back the power. So I was like, oh, okay, now what do I? So now their people were rolling up the no, they were rolling up their window by pushing a button, but and then somebody called the police. So the police came and I'm not a muckraker. I'm really not. I don't like confrontation. Remember, I'm a sensitive entity. I just knew that I had a purpose and I needed to go and confront people. But I didn't go to the police. I was like, okay, let me just leave because they called them because of me. So I went down to the Star. I got my first article in the Toronto Star, July 18th, 2002. I called up my husband. I was like, yay, I got an article in the Toronto Star. And he said, "I'm on my way home. I just got downsized." No. Come on, couldn't you? And I joke now, I'm like, oh my gosh, couldn't you have just got downsized tomorrow so I could celebrate my article in the Star? Yay, my 15 minutes. Here we are, 24 years later, still here. And since then, I've had over 300 articles, TV, radio, and since 2020, over 500 podcast guest appearances.
Holy moly. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, that just that whole garbage story might be a really good segue into maybe a metaphor about taking what's been discarded and turning it into something valuable. Are you willing to go down there, or are you really a
Yeah.
wormy person? Okay, please do.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't understand.
Okay, we're really good at throwing things away. We're a
Oh yeah.
discard society. But just like our garbage, the compost, where you talk about black gold, that is something valuable. What other ways are we discarding things that you see in the world that could become valuable?
Well, we're a very fast society. We're looking for the quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
We're also so fast that we want a pill rather than taking action for our health. All three of my streams, the worms, the sprouts, the laughter, they're all three things that offer a simple, sustainable life where we're slowing down, we're taking time. If you're composting, it takes time. If you're doing it outside, you got to walk out to the back of the yard, toss your things in, give it a turn, and you're going to use that compost in your garden. So all of these things take time rather than just going to the store and buying your vegetables or buying your compost. Doing the process takes time. And I think it's that we're discarding our time and we're throwing away our sleep time. Because we're so busy, we're living in this stressful time, and we wear stress as a badge of honor. Like, I'm so busy. Oh my gosh, I only got 2 hours sleep last night because of my list. My list is so long, and da da da, and the kids, and da da da, all the things. We're putting that hat on. We're the ones that are like, oh, I'm going to be so busy because, yeah. Then everyone's like if we're sitting down, just sitting. Looking at the sunset, like it's like, oh, or maybe that's more better when you're on Vancouver Island. That is a nice activity, probably. but just sitting, doing nothing, like just sitting, looking at the trees, or like just doing nothing. Then it's like, oh, people will call me lazy. I better do something. So we're always thinking, what are they gonna think? Instead of, what am I thinking? How do I feel? Like, who cares what everyone's thinking? And with social media, this chat really could go a lot of places. We discard everything. Instead of repairing things today, I actually darned my socks. I have these beautiful Cat in the Hat socks, red and white socks that are knee socks. And they got holes in the toes, but I wear them when I go to laughter yoga because they're fun. And I was like, they got holes in the toes. I don't want to buy new Cat in the Hat socks. So I just darned them. Which is easy to do. It's very easy. It's not pretty, like it's not a nice job. I would never
It's a
be.
lost art form.
It is. And I think there's a lot of things like that. We don't take the time to repair things. And quite often there's not even parts to repair things because there's the built-in obsolescence. I still have my washing machine. I moved into Bradford in 93, still the same washer and dryer. Because I take care of it. It doesn't have any electronics on
Bells
it.
and
It's
whistles, yeah.
right. It's all those things that they can break, and then the thing's garbage because you can't replace that, the board that makes it run.
Yeah, even just this morning, my brother and I chat each day with Wordle, but I don't know what he sent me something, and he said, "Oh, I guess the picture will be better when I get a iPhone 17 or something." And his iPhone is probably 10, 15 years old. Neither one of us, get a new one just because it's there. And so I just sort of chuckling and said, yeah, it'll be cheaper in 2028. You might as well wait it out. So we don't need those great photographs off our phone, for the most part. But yeah, isn't that true how we just it's just so easy to toss it. And I'm in the same boat as you where, I live somewhere and it's like I separate everything. I got like 10 different compost bins and recycle bins and compost and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's okay. Before we move on to worms, for a listener who's curious, maybe a little bit hesitant, what's an easy way to start with your vermicomposting?
Yeah, if somebody wanted to do vermicompost, any container will do. A Rubbermaid or a plastic tote is fine. recycling bin, anything like that is perfect. I would say not a box, although a box would work too, but the worms would eat the box. So not so good. Pardon me. Oops, that'll be edited out.
Oh no, if it embarrasses you, it stays in. It's only if it embarrasses me that it
So any container would do. It's creating the right environment for the worms. So they need, just like outdoor composting, they need a carbon nitrogen mix. The carbon is shredded paper, leaves, straw, cardboard, drink trays, any combination of your paper products. And the nitrogen is your food scraps. So coffee, tea, potato peels, banana peels, all of your peels can go in. You need eggshells to balance the pH. And the worms require the calcium for reproduction and water. That's it. You mix it all up. It needs to be about 70 to 80% humidity, so fairly moist, but not pools. They can't swim. And then you just add your worms in, and they are special worms, so you need to get them. I would say get them from a reputable supplier.
Okay, it's sorry, just a thought that had me there is you talk about needing worms. Could a group of women almost, you know how you had the sourdough starter and you share it? Could
Yes.
somebody start and then share their worms to other bins?
Absolutely. Yes. When I started my business, people would be like, "Oh, my worms are doing so great. I gave some to my neighbor. I sent some to
Oh,
my kids'
good.
school." I'm like, "Hey, stop giving your worms away. It's bad for my business." I already don't have repeat customers. Absolutely. Yes, the worms have a phenomenal reproduction rate. So somebody could start. And that's what I say, people. After, like, it's 3 to 5 months from setup to harvest, depending on a lot of factors: temperature, moisture, airflow, particle size, so many things. And there's lots of instructions on my website online on how to do this properly. And then at a certain point, you'll have so many worms. It's like, wow, look at how many worms I have. And when I tell about the phenomenal reproduction, people are like, oh, what if I have too many worms? Impossible. Not possible. The worms have a built-in mechanism to regulate their population based on available size and available food. So at a certain point, you'll have like a whole whack of worms. The adults start dying off to make room for the babies. The babies are very adaptable. It's not that they stop breeding, they don't. Yeah, so at a certain point, so at that point, it's like, oh, I have so many worms. You could either take some out and set up another bin to expand your squirm of worms. People will ask me, how many worms do I need? We're a family of four. It's not per person, it's lifestyle. So my question is, are you vegetarian or vegan? Do you prepare your meals at home or eat in restaurants? Is it frozen food? So all of these questions help to determine how many worms you would need. And if somebody was looking to manage all of their scraps, all of their organic matter, I would say, weigh it, get a bucket, weigh your scraps, the stuff you would put in for the worm bin for a week or two. See what you've accumulated, and then that gives you an average of what you're producing in a week. And then you need twice as many wor yeah, you need twice as many worms as scraps that you have.
Okay, so just one question that came to mind was, you've got your bin. You can see that, oh my goodness, I've got a whole college of squirmy worms here. If someone's got an outdoor compost, so with, we'll say small yard waste, so not the big tree branches, but leaves, dead leaves or clippings or grass cuttings, if they're mixing it in with some dirt, can you put those sorts of worms into an outdoor compost bin?
Yes, you can. And they speed up the process. They do the turning for you. And I kind of joke and say, now you've got all kinds of leisure time because you don't have to turn your compost anymore.
Oh, okay.
Right? So they're turning. They don't want you to turn it, in fact. And those
Oh,
tumbling
okay.
composters, I would not put worms in a tumbling composter because
Okay.
they don't like that. They don't like the Ferris wheel.
I hear that.
The challenge with putting them outside is, everybody loves worms. Worms
Oh,
have a
okay.
phenomenal reproduction because they're food for a lot of critters, right? Your rodents love worms, skunks, raccoons,
Birds, yeah.
birds, of course, snakes, frogs, all of these.
Okay.
Everybody eats worms. So having worms in your outdoor composter may attract other critters that you don't want to attract. And then in the winter, maybe not in Vancouver so much, depending on the winter, but in other parts of Canada, you would need to either insulate your composter somewhat, because what happens in the winter is when in the fall when they sense the temperature change, they breed more than usual, deposit their little eggs throughout, and then they go into hibernation. So they'll come together. They have very little personal space. And they'll come to the center, they'll come, and then you'll have a whole ball of worms in the center. And if it freezes, they don't survive. They don't have their own cryogenics, but the eggs will overwinter. So once you've got worms, you will pretty much always have worms.
And I know, being on the West Coast, is if I've got like my hydrangeas or something like that in, like not in the ground, but in a tub. I do exactly that. I go to the thrift store, I buy some old blankets, I wrap up the root ball, so that is protected from any snow or frost or whatever we get. So you would just do the same, I guess, to your outdoor compost bin.
Absolutely, or bring them in, or you could, take some of the worms and then do it inside for the winter and put them back outside. Yeah, there's lots of options, and it's so wonderful. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Okay, sprouts. You talk about them as superfoods. Talk to us about sprouts.
So my very first event that I'm exhibiting, 2002, big year for me. I'm exhibiting at my first event. Can you imagine? I think it was even Earth Day 2002. Very, very poetic. It was a gardening event, and there was a gentleman selling a sprouter there, a sprout grower, the one that I use and sell now. And it was flying off the shelf. It's the size of a dinner plate. It's food grade plastic. And yes, you can sprout in all kinds of vessels. The one I have is food grade plastic and a stainless steel mesh. So it's flying off the shelf. And when there was a break in the audience, I said, "What is that thing? And why are they buying that and not my worms?" In a nice way. And then I laughed, probably. This gentleman was, Tony Hornick is his name. He's 97 this year.
Oh my goodness, okay.
He was 72. I don't come from an entrepreneur background. I come from an employee background. I didn't know anyone that worked at 72. So I was like amazed. Here's this man, 72. Ballroom dancer, so beautiful, like healthy, lean ballroom dancer body, and a gentleman, right? Crisp white shirt. And so he told me about sprouts, and I was like, okay, I don't need to know why something works. It's working for you. Maybe it'll work for me too. And I was like, I'm going to be like you when I'm 72, like still working. If anyone listening has exhibited at shows, if you're an entrepreneur and you've been a vendor, it's not easy.
It's so hard.
It's hard, in fact, because you're putting your life on the line, and there you are standing there hoping people will stop at least. Sometimes people are just zipping on by, like, nope, and they don't even stop to inquire about what you're doing.
I was thinking, sorry, I'm going to interrupt for a second, because I was thinking, for me, it used to be physically hard. You're standing in almost one spot for hours on end. You maybe can grab something for to eat from under the table. It's just, I used to get home at with a headache, exhausted, just would go to bed.
Right, all of yeah, it's physically challenging because it's often on a concrete floor. So I would bring pads so I could stand on those, like those
Okay,
soft
the
pads.
squishy ones,
But
yeah.
right, so yeah, it's physically demanding. It's mentally challenging because you're maybe answering questions, which is great if people stop to engage. Yeah, and then people want a discount, and it's hard. Anyway, so there was this gentleman. I was like, wow, so great. So I said, okay, I'm in. So he said, if you're gonna do this, start your day with 2 tablespoons of sprouted mung beans. Mung beans are the bean sprouts from Chinese food. Okay, but they don't call them mung beans because mung isn't a nice, delicious sounding word. So, okay, all right. Right, I do what I'm told. I follow rules if the rules make sense. Otherwise, I'm a rebel. So for 10 years, I started my day with sprouted mung beans. I would see Tony at
As
events.
simple as that,
Yes.
one thing.
Yeah. And so
Oh my
this,
goodness, okay.
so let me tell you about sprouts, and then I'll get on. So I'm going to sound so smart because I am.
Of course, that's why you're on podcast.
Sprouts are hydrating, alkalizing, regenerative, biogenic, and contain up to 100 times more digestive enzymes than raw vegetables. Wow. So hydrating. As soon as we get thirsty, we're starting to get dehydrated. So the sprouts are juicy. Alkalizing. In an acidic body, that's where cancer and other diseases can take place. So the sprouts are alkaline food. Nice. Regenerative, I'll use Alzheimer's or cognitive impairment is usually a degenerative disease. Not that we can grow back our memories, but sprouts help to regenerate our cells. They fortify our cells. Wow. Biogenic, my second favorite thing. They're energy giving. They give us life. When we're eating live food, we get the life force from the food. And people will say to me, I don't want that much energy, like pointing at me, I don't want that much energy. It's like, eat half then. But imagine if you had, go, my next thing is like, well, if you imagine if you had all this energy, natural energy, not from caffeine, how much you could get done. Okay, I'm just saying that. And
No,
then,
absolutely.
right, the
Cheers.
digestive enzymes. So our food is broken. I think, well, not I think, when we're born, we're given digestive enzymes. But if we're not adding in enzymes in raw vegetables, salad, whatever, our body's using our reserves. And as we age, we start to get digestive issues, and it's getting younger and younger. Younger and younger people are getting digestive issues. And you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, here's a prescription for enzyme pills. Instead of taking a pill, folks, which hopefully there's some live something good in there, not just the chemical engineers doing their work. Sorry that I'm laughing. I can't help it. I'm a laughter teacher.
There you go. We're on to that next.
So imagine if you could just eat the sprouts and get your enzymes and you don't have to pay for a prescription and write all of that part. And the sprouts are my health plan. So 2012, I'm at an event and there's Tony again. Now he's 82, still working. I'm like, wow. And he would do these events himself. He would have very elaborate display. And wow, I was really in awe of Tony. I learned a lot from that man. So 82, and he said to me, why don't you sell the sprouter and the beans with your business? I was like, oh my gosh, that's a great idea. I love that product. And it's got to be easier than selling worms. Even though I'm still selling worms, but right? But not really, because maybe 15 years ago, there was an article, front page, Toronto Star, sprouts are toxic. And what they were talking about was the bags of bean sprouts that come from China. Like they're mung beans, right? They're sprouted already. Well, if they sprout in a day or two and they're on the slow boat from China, like, and it takes 3 weeks for them to get here, like, what have they put on them, first of all? To make them not really be gross. And even I would say even alfalfa sprouts or broccoli sprouts, anything that you buy sprouted already at the grocery store, like who grew them? How did they grow them? And what did they put on them so they stop, like so they don't rot? When we buy those sprouts sprouted, they're expensive. They might smell funky already and be a little bit slippery, which means they're already going bad, folks. They've already got some bad bacteria on them.
So is that why I'm going back 20, 25 years now? But when I was making sandwiches and I'd buy the little plastic tubs of sprouts, like bean sprouts or whatever, and or alfalfa sprouts, and put them like a big wad on a sandwich, right? Because it's so good. But within 2 or 3 days, yeah, that little plastic bin was getting slimy and I'd chuck them.
Right. Yes.
Okay,
Right,
okay.
because it's super fresh food. It's very fresh, and they grow fast and they go bad fast.
Yeah,
You
okay.
got to eat them fresh. So that's why I really advocate for growing your own sprouts, either with my sprouter, which is super simple, or in jars, however you want to do it. Just get eat sprouts and buy them your like you want to get organic seeds. The cost in seed form is nominal between conventional, like with that were grown with chemicals or organic. It's nominal. So we're sprouting for our health. I think we want to avoid as much chemicals as we can in our beautiful bodies. Our body
Yeah,
can't
no, for
process
sure.
chemicals. So I started to sell the sprouter. So I'm like, oh, great idea. I'm at an event. I would have sprout samples like Tony did. I only mung beans, only the bean sprouts, but just when the seed of the bean is the root is the size of the seed of the bean, that's when they're ready. So you don't wait till they have the leaves. Now they're
Okay.
microgreens, so they're kind of it's semantics. It doesn't really matter. Everyone calls them sprouts. It's fine, but they're kind of microgreens, which they have different properties. Once they have the leaves, now they have alfalfa or chlorophyll, so they have kind of different, and they're good too. They're good for you. Okay. So one day a woman came up, she's sampling the mung beans, and she said, "Well, what else can you grow?" And I said, "I don't know." Because I'm honest. I'm
Course,
also an
Tony.
honest businesswoman to my detriment. No, I'm just joking. So she said, "Well, what if somebody doesn't like mung beans?" I said, "Well, mung beans are my health plan. This is my health plan. I don't take a multivitamin. This is my multivitamin. It's got everything I need. It's hydrating, alkalizing, all those things. It's got fiber, protein, minerals, everything my body needs is in those mung beans." Okay. So I was like, "Oh my gosh, as a businesswoman, what do I care if people like sprouts, mung beans, or they don't? Like, let me try other things." So then I started growing like chickpeas, lentils, fenugreek, radish, like anything that grows into a vegetable starts as a sprout.
Of course it does. Yeah.
Right? They're not all edible raw, or they're not all as good as the other ones. And there are certain one beans that you can't eat raw. The one that comes to mind is kidney beans. You can sprout them, but you don't eat them raw. Otherwise, it's pretty much free game. And yeah, it's really fascinating because people would still come up, that article from the Star was still on their mind. They still
Oh,
believed
of
that
course, yeah.
sprouts were toxic. So they would say, "I heard that sprouts are toxic." So I would hold up my bag of beans and I would say, "If sprouts are toxic, then we're doomed because all food, all vegetables started in seed form. So if sprouts are toxic, that means all food is toxic, and that's not true. That's not true."
Well,
So,
and how many people read the headline and go like, "Oh my God," and they never read the article?
Oh, especially in today's very super fast world, we see things, we share things that, was put out there by the corporation that wants you to share it. Okay, I'm
Exactly.
not, without getting into conspiracy things. Right, the
Clickbait.
clickbait. Yeah, so I just think that we need to, you asked about what are we discarding? We're discarding the good knowledge. We're discarding our life because we're looking at what are the others doing? Oh, I want to do what they're doing, but we don't really know what they're doing. If that makes sense.
As you said that, I'm thinking, they're early adopters. And now I'm realizing that what we're doing is we're turning people into early adopters of things we used to know.
Oh my gosh, I gotta write that down. That's awesome.
But do you agree? Like, seriously, like a couple of generations ago, it was a moot point.
That's so true. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's it. Early adopters of things we used to know. Wow. Right? Advertising works, but influencers work better.
Yeah. I'll get there. No, I'm just kidding. You and I
Yeah.
together. Yeah. God, that's great. Sorry, I did, in case you're wondering why I was sort of looking away, I just went over to your Sprout page and yeah, wow. Okay, we're going to get there. We're going to get there right now. Laughter. When did it become, I mean, you've dealt with negativity, around the vermicomposting, and I'm sure people scratch their heads with the sprouts. Talk to us about laughter. When did it come into your life? How did it come into your life? And what's it changed for you?
Everything is the short answer. It changed everything. It was 2012 when one more person said, "Ew, worms in the house." That I'd heard it hundreds of times previously. That day I heard it and I felt it. I questioned everything. I literally came home and was like, "Oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. 10 years I've been at this universe. Help me. I literally don't know how to do what I'm meant to do here. Maybe I need to get a job." And then I was like, nope, this has to work. I would be a horrible employee now. Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what time to arrive.
Exactly.
And the very next day, I was introduced to laughter yoga at the very place I wrote my business plan for the worm business. Come on, you can't make it up. They had a speaker, and the speaker did a 5-minute introduction into laughter yoga. And I don't even do yoga. Like so laughter yoga is not doing yoga and laughing. And so I was like, laughter yoga, what is that? I love laughing. And that same week, 2012, I was at a networking event, hundreds of people. And the very first woman I met was a laughter yoga teacher. And I said to her, oh my gosh, laughter yoga is mainstream, right? I heard of it twice in 1 week. It must be. Because I'm the center of the universe, apparently.
Exactly. Of the Eastern or the Mid Canada universe. I'm the center of the Western
Okay,
Canada.
yeah, fair. Okay. And so that night, I mean, we trooped around, and everybody I met, I think I forgot that I had a worm business. I was like, have you heard of laughter yoga? Have you? Have you? I just couldn't believe that this was a thing and nobody had heard of it. And her club happened to be, Toronto's a massive city. So this networking event was right downtown, and her club was in North York. I don't know how many kilometers, but northern Toronto. And I was like, and it happened to be 5-minute walk from my mother-in-law's place. And my mother-in-law was so beautiful, she passed, but she would say to people, whenever Kathy asked me to do something, I say yes, because it's always an adventure. So I phoned her up and I said, hey, Mary, you want to go to laughter yoga? And she said, what's that? And I said, I don't know, but I don't want to go alone. So it was so beautiful. It became our date night. It was a monthly club, so we would go for dinner. And she was so nice, nicer than me. She would say, we better not have garlic. And I go, no, as long as we both have
Yeah,
it.
right. It gives us more room.
So we would go to dinner, and then we'd go to laughter, and it was just, a wonderful evening. But it was a hobby. It wasn't, we didn't take laughter serious. And it was at a very big, her club was at a very busy corner in Toronto. There must have been 20,000 people that lived at that corner. And after a couple of months, she had to close her club because she was renting space. We're not in business to lose business. We're not in business to lose biz money. And we're definitely not in business to break even. Oh, it used to drive me crazy when I would be at shows with people. And, oh, how'd you, go talking to the vendors. How'd you do? Oh, I broke even. Oh, darn, you could have stayed home and broke even.
Not the truth, yeah.
Right? Oh, I broke even. Oh, boo. Sorry about that. And so I was like, I was really sad. That day I came out of club and I looked up and I was just, ah, oh, man, we just need 10 people. Like, they just don't know this really fun thing is right here. And so I said, I got to get trained. So I got trained as a leader. I love that so much. I got trained as a teacher. So now I teach leaders. And in 2017, I was appointed laughter ambassador by the founder of Laughter Yoga.
Oh my goodness.
And it's changed my life. It changed, I think on a certain level, before laughter yoga, when somebody said, ooh, worms in the house, I took it personal. I think I did. After laughter, I became more resilient. I was like, ah, okay, ha ha ha. I don't mind if you say ooh about my baby, it's fine. The worms, I mean. They're not ready. It just kind of made me more, I don't know, more resilient and just joyful, just healthier. I laugh for the health of it. And so I was, before 2020, I was doing laughter gigs at paid gigs at long-term care with special needs. And that's my wheelhouse with laughter. I really love, because it's not about jokes or comedy. You don't have to understand why we're laughing. We just know we feel great when we laugh. So here's what happens when we laugh. We say laughing with no reason. We're laughing with no stimulus, but there's lots of reason for the health. When we're laughing, we're secreting all the love drugs, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins, the happy hormones. We feel good. When we're stressed, we're secreting cortisol, adrenaline, epinephrine. And I think the most important piece of laughter is the oxygen. Our brain requires 25% more oxygen than the rest of our body as an operating principle. It's a machine, the answering machine. So when we're stressed, Blood, lymph, oxygen leaves our frontal lobe and goes into our muscles so we can escape, even if we're escaping from our mind. So when we're laughing, we're exhaling. Ha 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 ha. If we want to keep on ha ha ha-ing, we have to take a beautiful, nice, long, deep breath in so we can continue laughing. And yes, there are breathing exercises like breathe in, okay, breathe in, everyone, hold it, breathe out. But we really don't need that because just by laughing, we're breathing deep.
And I think hopefully just this conversation today, it's so easy to add it in. Like I don't think we've cracked any jokes, but it's just the joy of the conversation, the looking, finding a humorous angle to one of your stories or something like that, like to find the joy. If you can't bring the joy, find the joy somewhere,
Yeah, and you were talking about the challenges with the negativity with the worms and the negativity with the sprouts. I've experienced it with laughter too. Because the people that are in their heads, the ones that are cerebral and they think they can think their way out of problems, you can't.
No, exactly.
whoops. They come to club and or maybe they don't come to club, but they if they meet me and I'm talking about laughter yoga, they may say, Kathy, there's so many things going on in the world. How can I laugh? My response is, there's so many things going on in the world. We must laugh. Otherwise, we're bawling in the corner. We're ineffective. And back to the oxygen, when we're stressed, it leaves our frontal lobe. Ever lost your phone, keys, glasses? And you're like, I gotta go. Where are my keys? And you're flapping around. If you have, anyone listening, if you've done that, that your brain can't help you. It knows where your keys are, right over there, but it can't tell you because it's literally deprived of oxygen. So we need to just stop, take a nice deep breath in, laugh it off, ha ha ha, apologize to everybody you yelled at. And like my mother-in-law used to misplace her glasses all the time, and I can't find my glasses. And it would be like, oh, they're on your head again, Mary. So beautiful. Like, so all three of my offerings, I just feel like I'm the one to bring all of this stuff because I have a way to explain it that helps people understand. And I've even, in Laughter Club, there's a game, it not played all the time, but sometimes there's a game that you start with a new group. It's called the pardon me, it's called the name game. So you say your name and you laugh. My name's Kathy. And then everybody laughs. And it needs to be set up that way where you say, all right, you say your name, you start laughing, and then we join in. So, because the first time I went to Laughter Club with my mother-in-law, that game was played. And people started laughing before the person had a chance to start laughing. And it felt so awful to me. I said to my mother-in-law, if I ever get trained doing this, I'm never doing that exercise because it feels like you're being laughed at. I didn't like that.
Try having a name like Agnes.
But our name is not funny, so that's why it kind of works. So I was hired to go and do work with Naamat group. It's a very I think it's over 100 years old Jewish women's group. So they do all kinds of work with helping the community, preparing meals, like wherever they're needed, they come together and they do things. There was maybe 20 or 30 women. They all know each other. They come together monthly to meet. The very last woman sitting beside me. So they'd gone around. She'd heard all her friends say their name and laugh. Everyone's laughing. Ha ha ha. She's sitting arms crossed. And she was so afraid. I know the whole time she was in her head thinking, oh my gosh, what? Oh my gosh. Anyway, we get to her and she said, poker face, you want me to say my name and laugh? And I kind of didn't know what to do. I thought, were the instructions not clear? But I felt for her because I could feel how much she was struggling. I said, yes, yes, please. If you could do that, that would be really great. And if it's, and so she said her name, and then she said, ha ha ha. Like, it was really, it wasn't a real laugh, and that's okay. And then we all laughed, and I said, thank you. You did it. How wonderful. And because here's the beautiful part about laughter. Our body doesn't know the difference between real and simulated laughter. What a
Okay.
gift. Our brain
Yeah.
does, our ego does. Like, hey, what are you doing? Why are you laughing? The role of our brain is to keep us safe and conserve energy. Right? So it knows what to do when you're at the family function and your sibling says that thing that gets you back in the fight. Oh, I know what to do here. Here we go. Like Thanksgiving, or people dread those family gatherings because, oh, we're going to have that same discussion that we've had for the last 10 years. Ha ha ha. Sorry if that's happening for you. So the beautiful part is we can laugh, ha ha ha, even if we don't feel like it. When I came to laughter yoga, I was really surprised because I'm a natural laugher. I don't need stimulus. But how many people came to laughter yoga from depression? And so when people are, pardon me, feeling sad, we say, like, how can I laugh? So we say, please bring your able body. And we'll help you laugh. We'll just help you because just making that, we just start with a smile, you smile, and then you send a note to your brain. Oh my gosh, I'm doing that curled up lip thing. I must be happy. And then we start secreting those happy hormones. Just a little bit, like just an over-the-counter dose. Pew, pew, pew. And then we add a giggle. And then a little bit more. Pew, pew, pew. Ha, ha, ha. We add a bigger giggle. Pew, pew, pew. We're literally in charge of our own pharma.
It's so neat. I guess I look back at my guests and I so enjoy my guests and I so enjoy talking. But there's been a few times where, and I think I'm one of those people that I'll find something to laugh about. And if this conversation's, and I'd love to hear from our listeners that have listened for a while, is do I'll be listening, we'll be talking, it can be quite serious. But somewhere along the way, it's like my, I don't know if it's my body, my brain, something goes into this little bit of revolt thing of good, and I have to find a way into a lightness to afford a, to find a laugh. B because as you say, we need it, but I think it's almost like withdrawal if you don't have it for a long time.
And not well. The challenge today is we are living in this stressful time. We're swimming around in the stress pool, right, with our badge of honor about stress. And I think that we've made stress such a habit, so normal that we are unable to experience joy. It's so like the
Wow.
stress is so ingrained, right? All those stress chemicals, all that low energy swirling around in our body, it's really challenging for us to experience joy. That's what I think. Why do we laugh at inappropriate times, like at the funeral or if somebody trips and falls? I think it's because it's a built-in mechanism. We're too stressed, our but we're going to blow up, so we laugh to re release the pressure, like the pressure cooker. So we laugh, ha ha ha, pew pew pew. We start secreting the love drugs. Ah, our body, ah, relief. Even though then we feel, maybe we feel ashamed or, guilty that we laughed at the inappropriate time.
I'm going to a celebration of life next weekend, and I was telling somebody recently from the same group, these two women, and I said, "Oh, when we went to this other person's celebration of laugh or life, it became a celebration of laugh, just because of who she was. You can't. There were no sad stories to tell. Like, it's not like she didn't have hardship. It's not like she didn't have challenges. But because of who she was, she always found joy and she laughed a lot. And so, to celebrate her laugh or her life, we have to give light, laughter, you know? So,
Right.
yes.
I think that's one of the things is allowing ourselves permission to feel the joy. I believe joy is our birthright. And when we're feeling good, what I say, when we feel good, we do good, and the world needs more do-gooders. Because when we're feeling good, we're looking up. We're looking around, we're connecting with other people. I make it my mission whenever I go out to meet someone new, to have a conversation. The other day I was hired to and this is really, I'm so thrilled. Bank of Montreal, BMO. Anyone from out of Canada, it's one of Canada's largest banks, has a wellness department. And they had a wellness conference and they hired me to come and do laughter yoga at their wellness conference. Although in when they were talking about it in the morning, like, here's what we're going to do, they said, this year we've introduced something woo-woo. And I was like, oh, I didn't know laughter was woo-woo, but huh, okay. So I took the commuter train down. And on the commuter train, people are either on their phone or they're sleeping. And I'm a morning person, so granted, I'm kind of a unicorn already. I want to meet people. Whenever I'm out, I'm just like high energy. I'm like, oh. So I said, universe, send me somebody to talk to on the GO train. And sure enough, a man sat across from me. He worked for Metrolinx, which is the, it's the commuter train and the subway. It's
Yeah, all
all
that
the
stuff,
things.
yeah.
Yeah. And they've had some bad press lately, so they definitely need laughter. And I said to him, hey, does Metrolinx have a wellness department? And he said they do. And I said, oh, would you give my card? I feel like I'm a bit of a hustler. I'm always giving out my card because if people, we can't keep what we do a secret,
Yeah.
because how are they going to know? Unless you're an influencer or something. Yeah, and so I said, wow, I'm sad about how low energy everybody is. Like everybody's just like they're like zombies. They're just like bing, bing, bing. I just felt all the energy. I felt like I was being dragged down by all the zombies that were just like going through their day. And I just think, how sad. Like we spend so much time at work, getting home from work. You have to enjoy, like, no, you don't have to. You do what you want. But for me, I want to enjoy every moment of my life. I don't, like, not that I do. I do have sad things happen and things happen. Oh my gosh, if you're not happy with your work, you need to leave. You need to leave your work and find something that brings you joy. You know, my husband and I traveled at when we were 27 for 13 months in Africa and Asia. And the accountant at the company I was working for said, these are your prime earning years. You're never going to make this money back. I said, I'm never going to have this energy again to go traveling. Like, I'm never going to be able to carry my 40-pound pack. Because people said, oh, when I retire, I'm going to travel. Okay, you might do the bus tour or something. You're not doing the hoofing like we did at 27. And I wouldn't even want to do what I did at 27. And I'm 63 now. And I didn't even think about climate change and war, like some of those places you can't even go anymore. Indonesia moved their capital to another island because it was sinking. I didn't even think about those things. Yeah, people put off their life thinking, ah, when I retire, I'm gonna start living my life. It's like you might not make it, first of all. And you were talking about tragedy. We've like the celebration of life that you went to. We've all had tragedy. And anybody that survived the COVID era had tragedy because how do you torture people? Isolation. Like in Canada, we were locked down for almost 2 years. Like again, the giggle because it's like nervous laughter. You know? So, and even when you're in prison, you don't want to be in solitary confinement.
Okay.
Shoo.
Okay, worms, sprouts, and laughter together. It's not the most usual combination. Connect the dots.
Before 2020, I thought
Is
I
there
was
just
a
one big dot called Kathy Nesbitt?
right. There is, and there is just like there's one big dot, Agnes Knowles, right? That we're all one big dot, whatever we do. I just have chosen a different way, and I think that before 2020, I thought it was a juggler. Like, what do you need? You need worms. You need sprouts. Well, you want some laughter, and then all that thinking time. Oh, more time to think. Oh my gosh, I don't need any more thinking time. But I had an epiphany during that 2 year of thinking. I was like, oh my gosh, all of my offerings are a way for a simple, sustainable life. If we just slow down and tend to our worms or our compost pile, we take that, we grow a plant, we grow a tomato plant or whatever, we're eating our sprouts to give us energy and nourishment. And then we're laughing, and I do laugh every day with intention. You know, it's wonderful. So I feel like they're not separate. They're not separate for me anymore. It is one big strand going through all three things.
And connect me, correct me if I'm wrong, but for you, it's worms, sprouts, and laughter. For anybody out there, it's this, that, and laughter. Like, whatever feeds you, whether that's, physically, emotionally, whatever, adding in the laughter is like the icing on the cake, perhaps. I don't know. I'm really simplifying here.
It just makes everything so much easier. It just has made my life so joyful. I'm out when I'm out and about. I do always my task is to make eye contact because people are on their phone, and I just got a phone the first time in my life. Maybe a month ago. It's a paperweight now because I don't know what to do with it. It's very stressful because I see people winging around on their cell phone, and I'm like, it's not intuitive for me. I'm
No.
like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do, and I don't really want to do it anyway. But people kind of forced it on me. My mom's like, here, have my phone because I don't have my car anymore. So you need to have a phone because what if something happens? I said, Mom, if something happens, everybody has a phone. And my husband, my brother-in-law gave my husband his phone, so now we're a two phone family. When we're what did I say that about the phone? Oh, my goal is when I go out to make eye contact, but people are even walking around on their phone. Like I don't know how they function. Like I often think, who is everyone talking to? Like I get that people are listening to things, but people are often talking, and I'm like, who is everyone talking to while they're roaming around? And can't they just do one thing, like just walk and look around? And I don't even want to have earbuds in when I'm
Yeah.
riding my bike or walking. I want to hear the birds. I want to know if I'm going to be hit by a car. I don't know. I'm funny that way. Except for those quiet electric cars that sneak up on you. I think if people chose to, leave their phone at home. I mean, I know then you can't take a picture if you see something that you want to photograph. I get it, but just capture it with your mind. like people are taking all these pictures. I wonder how many of those pictures really ever get looked at again.
Well, I remember, I'm looking at the clock here, we're gonna have to wrap, but
I know.
I remember many years ago when those little handheld video cameras came out, and somebody wrote an article saying, how much of life are you viewing through that little rectangular square as opposed to seeing the big picture? And it's the same in many ways with that phone. We're so busy capturing and centering the sunset or the play or the like whatever it is, the flower, that you're not seeing the big picture, which is where we live.
Have you gone to a concert lately? It's so annoying. You're looking at it through someone's little screen because everyone's
Oh,
recording
yeah.
the thing. It's like that is going to be horrible footage, by the way. No one's going to want to listen to that concert through your little phone. Like,
So, you know what you do with those people if you're close by? You keep on talking because that really messes up whatever they're filming because it picks up your voice. So, you just start reciting a book or a poem or something. Or,
oh, thank you. I kind of don't go so much anymore because I
yeah,
find it
no, I
really
hear you.
disruptive. It's
Yeah,
just
yeah.
we're so quick. I don't know what to say about our society, except that we are, it does seem like we're reverting back. Just I know we gotta go, we gotta wrap it. When I go into schools with my worms, so we'll bring it back around to the worms. When I do my school workshop, I have all this ancient technology. Everything's recycled in my bin, so I use a 1 liter carton because you need 1 liter of soil. So I say, why did I use this container? Getting them to think, and then I use a 2 liter pop bottle for the water. I need 2 liters of water, And then I say, oh, the next ingredient is eggshells. Oh, before we get to the eggshells, it's a film container. The little plastic film
Yeah,
container. And I say,
I remember those.
I know you do. I say, before we get to the eggshells, does anyone know what this container is? And sometimes the teachers are so excited. Like sometimes the teachers are too young to even know. That's how old I
Goodness.
am. But sometimes the teachers are so excited that they know and they blurt it out because they're just so excited that they know what it is. But I say, you know, don't worry if you don't know. I would be surprised if you knew. And so they'll say, you know, paint or pills or pins. And I say, yes, we keep those things in it, but what was this before? And then I say, you know, before phones and before digital cameras, we actually had film. They were called analog cameras, I guess. Well, they probably weren't, but they are now. And you would put your film in and ask your grandparents or great grandparents, if they're still here, how much they liked having their picture taken. Because no one did, right? Like maybe your finger was over the thing. And I said we would take pictures very cautiously. We would only take one picture
You had
because
to pay to have it
you had to
developed,
pay and then you had to wait. I hope my vacation pictures turned out. And then, yeah, so it was a whole different time. And I heard an article, or I heard a talk the other day that those cameras are coming back because the millennials and Gen Z are like looking for something. You can take great pictures with a phone because it's all automated, everything gets focused and whatnot. It takes skill to take a good picture with a, you know, a point and shoot camera.
Okay, so the question I ask everybody, is there anything we haven't talked about that you want mid-age women, and we've been all over the map, Lord knows, that you want mid-age women to think about after listening to us talk and laugh?
I would say, yes, I would just say, put yourself first. Put yourself first. We are so important. Self-care is self-love, and we really need to take care of ourselves. Otherwise, we get depleted and then we resent helping the other. We may be resentful or angry or just be like, ah, oh, I'm doing this thing for them and I don't even have time to do that for me. Maybe not even verbally, but in our body. And so if I may, Agnes, I would love to invite you and your listeners to my free online laughter club. It's 9:30 a.m., which may be early for the Pacific Coast people or Pacific time.
You mean like 6:30 in the morning?
6:30. I do have a woman from Vancouver who comes every week.
I'm up then. I because I got an invitation that's your autoresponder, I think on LinkedIn or something, and I got that response and I went. My favorite time of day is 6 o'clock in the morning, between 6 and 6:45, when I have my coloring app and I have my lovely huge mug of coffee. And it's sacred. Like nothing in my life can interrupt that. I will get up at 5 o'clock in order to have it. So I'm thinking, am I willing to get up earlier to have that sacred time to join Kathy's laughter club? But anyways, okay, so tell us about the laughter club.
Yeah,
Nine
so it's
30 Eastern.
9:30 a.m. Eastern. It's 30 minutes of super fun self-care. I incorporate a lot of healing modalities. I incorporate tapping, brain gym, qigong, just to help people get out of stress and into joy. Laughter is complementary magic medicine. So you can stack modalities. We can't multitask, but we can stack modalities. So we can tap and laugh, or we can tap and breathe, or we can do qigong and laugh while we're doing it. And it's so beautiful. We are celebrating 6 years this June. I started in June of 2020. It's a global giggle gang. I get people from around the world. Special needs and seniors is my wheelhouse. So I have long-term care sometimes comes. I have community living that comes. Sometimes schools, like classrooms, will come. I don't record my sessions because I want people to feel safe, that they can just come and play. And I want people to have gallery view, cameras on, yes, please. And so we can look at each other. It's making eye contact, just coming and just being present for that 30 minutes. It's so wonderful. I do have a dedicated following now. I get 25 to 30 people every week. And new people every week. So sometimes, you know, they might pop in and go, oh, that was random. And it is. It's very strange. I would say if somebody hasn't done laughter yoga, plan to come twice because the first time could be awkward, like, ooh, this is weird. And then the second time, you know what to do. You're like, oh, I know this.
There you go. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
My laughter page is kathysclub.com. Worm website is kathyscomposters.com. Sprouter is kathysprouters.com. I'm on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook.
Holy crow. Okay. We haven't gotten personal at all throughout this. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Absolutely, yes.
You call your life, you say you've built a magical life. Can you expand on that for a moment? What is a magical life? What made that possible?
I just, because of my choices, I think my stepfather passing when I was 21 had a huge impact. It was a great loss, like many deaths of loved ones are. And from his passing, I decided to live life and not wait. So I went on that trip. I never stayed in a job that didn't serve me. I don't, I'm, I say yes to life. So, because there's opportunity there. When we say no, we shut things down. I'm improv trained, so it is yes and then we figure it out. I say yes and then figure out what I'm going to do. I applied to speak at the Global Grief Conference, which took place a couple of weeks ago. And when they accepted my application, I was like, oh my gosh, I knew that I could help, but how, I don't know how to launch into it, and it ended up being one of my best talks, maybe not ever, but a really good talk, and it was cathartic for me. I was able to bring my stepfather in, so keeping him alive through the podcast, and talking about how laughter has changed everything. So I just feel like I'm on a magic carpet ride. When we say yes to life and we're open to opportunity, and I'm not saying yes to things that you don't want to do. I'm not saying being a doormat. No, those days are gone. That door is closed. I'm saying when someone says, hey, do you want to do this thing? Ask yourself, is that for me? If yes, say yes. If no, say no. Like, don't say, oh, maybe, or say yes and then feel bad about it. We need to stand in our power and be true to ourselves, because when we're true to ourselves, then I think we attract the things that we're meant to be attracted to. And we attract the people that are attracted to that also authentic energy.
I left the pregnant pause there. Really, yeah, impressive answer. Wasn't a good answer. It was an impressive answer. I like that. Okay, thank you. Your website link is in the show notes. All the links are on your page at our website. Listeners, I'd love to hear from you. What part of this conversation stayed with you? And be honest, are you even a little bit more open to the idea of worms than you were before? If this conversation made you think differently or smile in a way you didn't expect, share it with a friend who might need a reminder that small shifts can lead to something meaningful. If you're enjoying these conversations, make sure you're following the Boomer Woman's podcast on your favorite platform so you don't miss what's next. If you'd like to listen early, I release each episode on Substack on Wednesday evening before it goes live everywhere else. And my usual reminder, if you haven't dropped by boomwithabang.com yet, it's really shaping up, so drop over and check it out. Kathy Nesbitt, thank you for being my guest today, for reminding us that sometimes the simplest, most unexpected things can reconnect us to ourselves, to the world around us, and to a little bit more joy in the process. So thank you.
Thank you, Agnes.
Have a great rest of the week.